This is The Guardian.
I'm Laura Murphy-Oates, and this is The Full Story. The Omicron variant of COVID-19 has prompted governments around the globe to take rapid action and reintroduce border restrictions. But already, cases of the new variant have been found in several countries, including Australia, where a handful of returning travellers in New South Wales and the Northern Territory have tested positive for the variant, with one case visiting several venues across Sydney and the Central Coast. The World Health Organization has labelled Omicron a variant of concern. But what exactly do we know about the makeup of this variant and the level of risk that it poses? And how has science evolved to combat COVID-19 variants like Omicron? Today, the science behind Omicron and the future of COVID-19 variants. It's Wednesday, the 1st of December. Okay. What variant were we talking about last time?
C117. We've also, I think, briefly discussed Mu. I'm pretty sure we've discussed Alpha and Beta.
Melissa Davey is medical editor at Guardian Australia. I feel like every couple of months we reach out to you to go, should we do an episode about this variant? But it does seem that they don't really turn into a thing. They're not as transmissible as we think. But now there is this new variant that has led to travel bans around the world. Can you tell me about it? What is it?
Yes. So this new variant is called Omicron, and it was first detected by scientists in South Africa.
South African scientists are investigating a new COVID variant, which is believed to be the most mutated version of the virus to date.
So-called Omicron variant, first identified in South Africa.
This morning, another worrying new COVID variant surging abroad. Scientists in South Africa identified...
And they had been noticing a rise in cases, mostly in young people. So they examined what was happening in the laboratory. And doctors say this particular variant is spreading very quickly. So there's these spikes in cases throughout South Africa, all involving Omicron. And it's now also been detected in very small numbers so far in countries like Australia, the UK, the US, Canada, and it's popping up through Europe. So on Saturday, the World Health Organization declared it a variant of concern, which means they think it might cause more severe disease or deaths. And they also think it might evade some of the responses, the public health responses, whether that's vaccines or whether that's social distancing. Those kinds of measures might not be as effective. So the chief medical advisor to the UK Health and Security Agency has warned that this is the most worrying variant that they've seen so far.
So how did this variant emerge?
So in South Africa, around 35% of people are fully vaccinated. So that's obviously very low comparing it to the rest of the world. It's actually pretty high for Africa, though. The overall vaccination rate in Africa is only 6% in a population of 1.25 billion people. So that's a real concern. Now, this can lead to variants for a couple of reasons. So one expert I spoke to, Associate Professor Stuart Turville.
You could just say your full name and title as well.
Oh, sorry. Associate Professor Stuart Turville from the Kirby Institute, University of New South Wales. Essentially do the virological response to all of the COVID aspects.
Told me that the more that a virus jumps between people unstopped, the more it spreads in a vulnerable population who aren't immune.
And it's really hard for the virus to really get, you know, battle hardened in those conditions because it has to jump. Oh, it's a new battlefield. Where it likes to change is if it stays in the same battlefield and knows its environment. And unfortunately, those battlefields for the virus are people with, you know, that have their armor down. So they're with a little bit less immunity than what the healthy person in the community would have.
So variants may develop better in people with low immunity. And I imagine that's a big issue in Africa.
In South Africa and throughout Africa, we know there are quite high rates of HIV and untreated HIV. And people with HIV have very weak immune systems. So there is a hypothesis that perhaps the virus infected someone with a weak immune system, and That takes a lot longer to recover from. The virus basically just stays in the body. It can last for months, just changing in one person, mutating away before it's passed on to another person. So it could have mutated that way. We just don't know.
Mm. As we discussed, Mel, multiple variants that we've spoken about before have just fizzled out. Why is this one so worrisome? Why is the World Health Organization kind of singling it out right now?
It's because of what they've seen with previous variants when they've looked really closely at them. And they've noticed that when they've looked at Omicron, it contains a lot of concerning variables and mutations that have already been identified with other variants. When variants emerge, the scientists in the laboratory will have a look at what changes on the spike protein, which is how it infects cells, what changes are associated with things like increased transmissibility, higher infectiousness. So Omicron has more than 30 mutations in the spike protein, and that's really worrying because it might lead to higher transmissibility. Delta carries only 2 mutations, and look at the damage that Delta has caused. It's become the dominant variant worldwide. So the thing is, you've got to kind of wait and see how these different mutations work together. So just because it carries them, it might also have other mutations around it that kind of lead to it fizzling out or, not surviving. So there are all these concerns, but there is a lot we still don't know about this variant. That's important to remember. And we don't know that these mutations will end up working together to make it more highly transmissible or more severe.
With what we do know so far, do we have any sense of what the Omicron variant could mean for the effectiveness of vaccines and for COVID-19 treatment?
Yeah, so there's always concern when there are variants of this nature that they could decrease the effectiveness of public health measures like vaccinations and treatments. But as we keep saying, we just don't know for sure yet. We need more information. I spoke to Professor Sharon Lewin.
My name's Professor Sharon Lewin, and I'm director of the Doherty Institute, which is a joint venture of University of Melbourne and Royal Melbourne Hospital.
Professor Lewin said that she believes the vaccines will remain effective because with all of the variants to date, we've seen this, even with Delta, the vaccines remain really effective, especially against severe disease and hospitalisation. She said the vaccine-induced antibodies that the human body develops in response to the vaccine have quite a bit of tolerance for variation in the virus.
The vaccines that we designed for Wuhan work really well against Delta. We don't need mutant vaccines or vaccines designed against variant strains.
With Delta, for example, the vaccines work really well with vaccinated people 3 times less likely to get sick and 9 times less likely to die than an unvaccinated person. So that's really good. Mm. And so experts worldwide are also saying this, that it's more likely that maybe immunity with the Omicron variant following vaccination will be a little bit less strong, but it won't be completely lost. The vaccines won't be completely ineffective. But finding out how this variant will impact our immunity will take a few more weeks.
So you say Dr. Lewin suspects vaccinations will still work against this variant. Is that being borne out with what we've seen with cases so far in vaccinated people?
So what we've seen is that vaccinated people are able to be treated at home. The illness is not that severe, and it's appearing in mostly young people who we know are generally healthier and fitter anyway. So it doesn't seem at this stage that this variant is causing more severe disease. In fact, it may be milder.
Mm. That all sounds pretty promising, Mel, in terms of the stress that a lot of people have had over the past couple of days hearing about a new variant emerging and spreading.
Yeah, it's definitely not time to be panicking or stressing, but there are just some concerns that we need to be watching and monitoring. And Professor Lewin did say that the mutations that Omicron carries look like they might have the greatest interference with antibody treatments being used to treat COVID patients. So these are like the drugs or the treatments being given to people who are very sick with COVID or given to people who doctors suspect might become very sick with COVID.
Mm. Why is Omicron a worry with treatments and not so much with vaccines?
Well, apparently the treatments are very sensitive to spike protein mutations, much more sensitive than the vaccines. And so the specific mutations that Omicron has looks like they might affect treatments. And obviously that's really concerning when it comes to treating those who remain unvaccinated, but also those who are immunocompromised, who might not be able to get vaccinated, or who get the vaccines, but they're just not quite as effective as for healthy people. If we are right about all of our concerns about this variant, and it is more infectious than Delta, what we know COVID is very good at doing is finding vulnerable people. And if it spreads faster, there is a real concern that it will spread amongst vulnerable populations even more quickly, and that may put pressure on our hospital systems. So we do need to just keep watching this and remain calm, but just make sure that we don't drop the ball on monitoring how this thing is behaving.
Right. When I hear this, I think of the outbreak in the Northern Territory at the moment. We know Indigenous populations have lower vaccination rates, are more vulnerable. So, you know, a more transmissible virus is always a concern when we're thinking about vulnerable populations like Indigenous communities.
That's a really good point, because even in a really highly vaccinated population like Australia, you have these pockets where the vaccination rates are lower. You even think of places like Byron Bay, for example. This virus, no matter what variant, could really cause a lot of damage if it got into those communities.
Mm. With all of these factors combined, Mel, I'm wondering how we should view the threat that Omicron poses, especially compared to Delta and the first wave of COVID-19 overall. I mean, did the experts give you any sense of how they are assessing this as a global threat?
Yeah, they're pretty level-headed about it. Dr. Turville told me that he hopes this will be a fizzer, just like other variants that we've spoken about on this podcast before. And Dr. Sharon Lewin says that she's not necessarily convinced it will overtake Delta. She said it might.
I suspect it's not going to be hugely different. Delta swept across the world and had high infectiousness, that was for sure. There's mixed reports on whether it has got greater severity or not. And the vaccines that we have work pretty well against Delta, slightly reduced compared to Alpha. And so we may well see something similar with Omicron. But I also think we shouldn't get ahead of ourselves too much at the moment. But we know nothing about its virulence. We know nothing about its sensitivity to vaccine.
But even if it does, it doesn't necessarily mean that we'll have to start changing vaccines, for example, or that vaccines won't be effective. In fact, that's very unlikely.
Next, Omicron's impact on public health restrictions and the future of variants.
We're here to give you a brief update on the latest actions in relation to the Omicron variant.
So, Mel, in response to this variant, we've already closed our borders shut to visitors from 9 African nations.
We will put a pause on the next phase of international arrivals, which would have commenced on the 1st of December.
We've also delayed the border reopening for skilled worker visa holders and international students,
which we're going to commence on the 1st of December, will now commence on the 15th of December.
Plus the opening of the travel bubble with South Korea and Japan by a few weeks overall. And we've introduced tighter testing and isolating procedures for all international arrivals.
We're doing this out of an abundance of caution, but our overwhelming view is that whilst it's an emerging variant, it's a manageable variant.
I think the question that a lot of people have, though, is whether even more restrictions are on the horizon and how serious those restrictions might be.
Yeah, it's always a worry for those people who are just coming out of lockdown restrictions in places like New South Wales and Victoria, and obviously there were shorter lockdowns elsewhere. On Monday, the Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, went on Breakfast TV and he ruled out closing the international borders to citizens, and he's called for calm. Early in the week, health experts also suggested that state border closures would be unnecessary.
Ultimately, though, we need to open up to the world. we need to do so safely.
And the New South Wales Premier Dominic Perrottet has warned against any knee-jerk reactions.
We need to have a proportionate and balanced response to the situation that's in front of us as our health officials obtain more information, both at a state and Commonwealth level. Ultimately, our number one priority is to keep our people safe. That's what we've done over the last 18 months, and that's what we'll do over the next 12 months.
Is this reaction from the Australian federal government closing international borders somewhat justified by the level of risk?
It depends which expert you speak to. The federal chief medical officer, Paul Kelly, told Fran Kelly on Radio National Breakfast that as more information arrives, Australia will constantly review its stance. But there is a sense from some experts I've spoken to that the response so far has been really overly cautious.
How so?
So Professor Lewin said that the World Health Organization had essentially jumped the gun in labelling Omicron a variant of concern.
The minute they press the button, then that tells the world this is a variant of concern. So they pressed that button, seeing that a new strain rapidly replaced Delta in South Africa and assumed therefore it must be more transmissible.
She said that they had done so in the absence of enough evidence that it is more transmissible or that it is evading public health measures like vaccines, as we discussed earlier. And she said we should only really be ramping up our response this dramatically, like closing borders, if there is a real variant of concern, meaning that we know that it's causing more deaths, more severe disease, it's evading the immune response, it's spreading more quickly, and we just don't have all of that detail yet.
I think, you know, variants are part of COVID. The most important thing we need to know about the variant is, does it cause more severe disease and does it evade vaccine responses? And we don't know the answer to that.
What is the risk when you clamp down too quickly, when you declare a variant of concern too quickly? What is Professor Lewin worried about there?
Well, it creates a sense of chaos.
But once you push that button, you know, it creates chaos around the world.
It makes people very, very worried. It disrupts everything from travel plans to the economy. And of course, you know, we need to be thinking about health above some of those things, but it might not be necessary yet to be doing this.
Right. So instead of jumping to closing borders and ramping up restrictions necessarily, are there other ways that Australia should and could be preparing for Omicron?
So one of the things that we can do and that experts have been calling for is highly vaccinated places like Australia need to be helping other countries get vaccinated. We're going to achieve more than 90% vaccination rate, while other places are just so incredibly low in their vaccination rates. So experts are saying this isn't just a health issue, it's a moral issue, it's an ethical issue. And yes, we have been donating vaccinations to other countries, but we can be doing more and we should be doing more along with other really privileged countries.
Right. And this is actually in Australia's self-interest as well, isn't it, Mel? Seeing as this variant may have emerged due to COVID spreading in Africa where there's low vaccination rates and then mutating there. But what else could we see change in Australia's pandemic response going forward?
The other thing we may need to do is to tweak how we administer the booster shots. So if the variant means our immune response is somewhat blunted, then we may need more protection to keep us going. The Health Minister, Greg Hunt, has said that the federal government has asked the Australian Technical Advisory Group on Immunisation to look at whether a third booster shot might be brought forward. So at the moment, it's recommended you get it 6 months after being fully vaccinated. Maybe that will be moved sooner. Plus, even if this variant does evade vaccines, we can tweak our vaccines quite easily. So the federal Health Minister, Greg Hunt, said that if Omicron does prove to evade vaccines, Pfizer has already assured the government that they can tweak the mRNA vaccine within 6 weeks and ship initial batches of that out within 100 days. So that's a really fast turnaround.
So Mel, even if Omicron is relatively benign, what about the next variant? Are we just going to see more variants and kind of live in fear of a deadlier one emerging in the future?
Not necessarily. I mean, often viruses change over time to become more transmissible, but a lot weaker. So they're actually less of a concern. And if you think about it, it's not very good if a virus becomes more severe and deadly, because if you're killing your host, you can't spread. So it's not very effective for a virus to mutate in that way. So I wouldn't be panicking about, you know, this constantly mutating virus becoming more aggressive, more severe. It might not necessarily do that at all. And if we look at viruses in the past, that's not typically how they behave. We could see a much more mild virus down the track. We do have to find more ways to treat it, but if you think about when we were speaking very early on in the pandemic, we had nothing to treat this virus apart from intensive care. That's really supportive care, you know, just trying to keep people alive. But now we have some really effective treatments for people that can stop them from becoming severely unwell. We can give those treatments to people who we think might get severe disease, like people who are immunocompromised. We have these mRNA vaccines, which are incredible, and they can be quickly altered to react to the variants, like we were talking about before. And we really have vaccination, right? So this is something that has already been shown to really be effective, and we just now need to keep ramping those vaccination rates up, but making sure we do that across the globe, that we're not just taking care of our own. And in fact, even in Australia, making sure that there aren't little pockets left behind.
That was Melissa Davey, Guardian Australia's medical editor. You can read her reporting on this at theguardian.com and catch the latest news on Omicron at the Guardian Live blog. This episode was produced by Karishma Luthria, Jane Lee and Joe Koning. Sound design and mixing by Camilla Hannon. The executive producers of Full Story are Gabrielle Jackson, Melanie Tate, and me, Laura Murphy-Oates. Okay, catch you tomorrow.